I am an uncommon church builder. I am Leading Second.
Hey everyone, I'm Brandon Stewart, and welcome back to the Leading Second podcast, where we're on a mission to raise up uncommon church builders and be the kind of leaders that our pastors would absolutely kill to have on the team. Well, I was in the office all day today in meetings, as is the custom, it seems like, on Tuesdays. Of course, the Leading Second offices are housed at my home church, Champion Center, and it's a busy season in our world. We are coming up on the eve of Team Church Conference at the beginning of August here, which I hope you're planning to attend. And if you're not able to make it to the Seattle area, August 6th through the 8th, I hope you'll join us at teamchurchconference.com for a live experience we have online. And, you know, Leading Second is actually an extension of and an expression of the Team Church tribe. And so our worlds collide a few times a year, this being one of them. So lots of fun things coming down the pike for this fall. In fact, I'll make a quick announcement along those lines for Leading Second in regards to merch. We have had a lot of requests lately for merch. We ran a couple of short runs of some items right when we launched back in February and blew through those in one day and haven't had any since then. But I'm excited to announce that we are releasing a new line of merch through Leading Second on August 6th. It'll be available at Team Church Conference in person for those of you that will be there in person, as well as online at leadingsecond.com. So you'll definitely want to check that out for a few days while we have the store open. Anyways, I'm so excited for our episode today. I've been waiting for this episode to get here, and you're going to be so impacted by what we're going to talk about today. Before we get there, we have a question from a listener of the Leading Second podcast that we want to answer today. As you know, last week I gave a shout out to everyone who is in Brisbane, Australia, and you can listen to that episode to hear why. Well, funny thing, we heard from several of you this week from Brisbane, which I absolutely loved, and someone actually sent in a question, so I fast-tracked that question and figured that would be a great one to answer on this episode. So let's check out this question coming to you straight from Brisbane, Australia.
Hey guys, my name's Kieran. I'm a youth pastor in Brisbane, Australia. First of all, I just wanted to say good job on the podcast. Love it. I think it's both unique and necessary. And so you guys are smashing it. Good job. Hey, I had a question. So as I said, I'm a youth pastor. My senior pastors are also my in-laws, my wife's parents. And so my question is surrounding serving family in ministry, whether it's a parent or an in-law or maybe a brother or sister in some cases. But obviously, this comes with its own set of unique challenges and also benefits. So I wonder if you guys had any thoughts around serving family in ministry. Awesome. Thanks, guys. Keep it up.
Well, Kieran, it was great to hear from you. And I love this question. In fact, when you sent us this question, you also suggested it as a future episode of the podcast, which I couldn't agree with you more, and we are absolutely going to get that scheduled. For the time being, for the sake of your question today, thank you for asking it. It's a big question. I am not a PK. I am very close, I think, to being one in that I've grown up around ministry and around my pastors, but I'm not one. And I'm raising my own now. But I have had a lot of years of being very close friends with my pastor's daughter and now her husband, and have a lot of friends around the country and work with a lot of people around the country who are PKs. And so I feel like I have a close view for not being a pastor's kid. And I would just probably say a couple things to you quickly regarding this relationship. Number one, I would just encourage you and any PK listening to never apologize for or back up from the place that you have as your pastor's kid. It's the greatest blessing of God on your life. And no matter what anyone says and how anyone treats you, never apologize for it and never back up from it. That God has positioned you to do something significant, and God has blessed you. with that position, and he wants to use that in a very unique way. I think the second thing I would say to you along those lines, though, is that as you lead, and I was thinking how to answer this in terms of leading second, and what I realized is that you're going to have to lead on a team. And that means you're going to have to lead on a team that's primarily made up of other people that are not your pastor's kids. And of course, in your position, you married into the family. I think you got to realize that the number one battle you're going to face is a view of entitlement, meaning others are going to view you as entitled, that you got where you are simply because of your last name or the family you married into. I don't believe that's the case, but I just believe that that's the number one perception you'll have to battle. So let me just encourage you with this, that you're going to have to work extra hard, maybe even a little bit unfairly, but you're going to have to work extra hard to approach your role with humility and be others first. Just approach your role and sense on the team. Never apologize for it. Never back up from it, but approach it with a sense of humility and approach it with a sense of promoting others, pushing others out to the front, being so for others. One of the great ways that we gain influence with others is just to champion them and to help them succeed. When someone's life is fundamentally different because of you, they just can't wait to follow you next time. And so I just encourage you to approach it with the right spirit and to keep on and to realize that you'll always probably have some people that don't understand that role. And in that case, never apologize for it. But you can do your part, which is lead with a sense of strength and humility and being others first. I just feel like that'll go a long way for you and for everyone listening. So thank you for that question today. If you have a question that you would love to hear answered on the podcast, I'd encourage you to join the Leading Second Forum on Facebook. We'd love to have you in our community. You can ask your question there or email us at leadingsecond@churchforward.co. leadingsecond@churchforward.co. We'd love to feature your question on a future episode of the podcast. All right, so for today's episode, I am so excited to introduce you to my friend, Israel Campbell. He and his wife, Rachel, are the campus pastors of Wave Church in Los Angeles. It is a tough assignment, folks, to pastor in Hermosa Beach and Manhattan Beach, where they're at. Israel and Rachel have an incredible story, an incredible passion for ministry. You are absolutely going to love this conversation on the art of sonship. In fact, I'll mention Israel has a book coming out later this year on the art of sonship. You're going to want to get a hold of that. Stay tuned to his Instagram and his site for more information on that. Let's head over to this interview, my conversation with Israel Campbell. Hey, Israel, thanks for jumping on a Skype call here for a few minutes today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Man, I'm doing well. You are probably in Southern California, as we are talking, which makes me extremely, extremely jealous. Tell us about the tough place that God has called you to suffer for the Lord and pastor.
Yes, these people need Jesus too in Hermosa Beach, California. And yes, it is a nice 70 degrees, no humidity, and great waves. And so if you needed to, Brandon, have a board meeting, you could come down here and grab your surfboard and have a great meeting.
I am going to take you up on that. That's probably not something I have to pray about even. But hey, we love you and your wife, Rachel, your family. Love so much about your story. So thank you for a few minutes today. Thank you, I guess, not only for your time. Thank you for just being someone that comes into my life and challenges me. Our friendship actually goes back to a time when I needed to call someone and pick someone's brain about a situation we were facing, and through several recommendations, this name Israel Campbell came my way, and you made some time and challenged me and gave me some wisdom, and it was extremely helpful. And I've made you hang out with me anytime we've been in Southern California ever since. So I love it, man.
Oh, I love it too. But you always tell that story, but you get part of it wrong because you forget about the major impact I made on you when you were in your yes, I preached a message one time that was so phenomenal that you don't even remember it or remember me. So what's been great about our relationship is you keep me humble, and I remember that I actually still have a long ways to go. So, yes.
You know, I probably could clarify that story and redeem it a little bit. I think we're just going to let it sit right there. Right in that space. And, you know, I am forever grateful for the impact you made on my life that I don't remember. How about that?
Thank you. Perfect. And this is a recorded podcast, so now I will be using that on all my material. So thank you.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Okay, so get us started. I always like to ask people that we're talking with on the podcast, tell us something about you that is unique, interesting, or something that people listening may not know about you.
Okay. You have a short podcast, so I can't tell you everything that's unique and interesting about me. But one thing is that I am actually 100% deaf in my left ear. And it almost kept me from getting married, because when I was in bridal school or Bible school, rather,
bridal I sat school, next that would be interesting.
To, yes, yes. I sat next to this good-looking woman of God, and she said that she talked to me several times in class, but I never heard her because I'm deaf in my left ear. But thank God for Old Testament survey in the third quarter, and she sat on my good side, and I heard her, and the rest is history. Three kids later, living in Southern California. So there's something kind of interesting, I guess.
No, it's fascinating. And but hey, we love what you all are doing. You're part of Wave Church, but Wave Church in LA. And what I love so much about your role and your life is you are a lead pastor and a campus pastor. Kind of at the same time. Why don't you tell people about the house that you're part of and the church that you planted and all of that?
Yeah, again, we are suffering for Jesus in Hermosa Beach, and we are campus pastors here under our leadership of our senior pastor, Pastor Steve, and Pastor Sharon Kelly in Virginia Beach. And, we just have this incredible relationship where we actually had pastored for 10 years in North Carolina and, in a sense, had, this relationship where they pastored us without necessarily the title. And, we were influenced by them, learning from them, and just knowing that there was another phase in our ministry and another season for us. And we actually chose to, in a sense, be under their leadership. So, we could have maybe been the Lone Rangers and done it ourselves, but we really recognize the importance of not doing life alone, and then also the importance of, having some spiritual authority in your life, people that can hold you accountable and can stretch you and can also help you do what maybe you could never do on your own.
So I just want to stop there for a second and make sure everyone listening understands what you just said, because it's profound, and it's probably the reason we're even talking today, is the idea that you had pastored and had done well pastoring, and yet you saw the need and felt God leading you to be under authority and be a part of something bigger than you, and you actually moved yourself and your family and church and ministry, all of that, under someone else's leadership. And I just think not only is that so rare, I just think so many people could benefit from having that kind of perspective, even in their own situation, on how much blessing there actually is when you live your life under authority.
Yeah. I think independence sometimes is overrated. Sure. And Jesus marveled at the centurion, because the centurion said, I'm under authority, and that's why I have authority. And Jesus marveled at that. And I do think a lot of people miss out on that great principle, and it affects every area of your life. And, obviously it's got to be the right fit, but every pastor needs a pastor. And if you don't have that, you're missing out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So a few months ago, or a couple months ago, you shared with me that you were in the process of writing a book, which is now set to come out later this year. And man, when you told me this title, I about did a lap around my living room. The Art of Sonship. The Art of Sonship. I am literally, like, I can't wait to read this. Tell us a little bit about this book and why you chose to write this.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because when you write a book, your first thought is the only thing that I could actually write on would be a color book. And I didn't know if I had enough to even fill that up. But actually, you write things that you hopefully are living. And, you know, even our relationship on some of the things that we've talked on, you know, the heart that you have for God's house. And then just some of the things that I've walked through was really trying to learn that art of sonship. And I believe it is an art. It is almost in some cases, in some people's lives, the lost art. And other people is just, you know, learning how to do that. But really, the whole book is on David and his sons. And, you know, David was an incredible warrior. We find the most about a biblical character probably in the life of their whole life, probably about David. We get to see when he was young. We get to see when he was old. We get to see, you know, his relationship with Saul. We get to see his relationship with his kids. We see his sin and all of that. And so this story is about David's sons. And a lot of people don't know this, but David actually had 18 different sons and wow, only one reigned. And, you know, think about this. If you're a son of David, your dad is the nation's best songwriter. He's like Bono. He's the best warrior. So he is, you know, he's the equivalent of the LeBron James. He's, you know, Tom Brady GOAT. And then besides all of those things, he is this, you know, Israel's second king. And so the book goes through the lives of David's sons and why some of his sons, you know, did well and some of his sons didn't do well. And we know from biblical reference, Jesus says that, you know, we're called to do greater things. And so when it's the thought of sonship, you know, fathers really do want their kids to do better than they did. Yet in case of David and his kids, you can actually see where some of them missed out on this great potential and this great future. And I've been around church long enough that I've seen people that were way more gifted, way more talented, way more anointed, but now aren't even in church, or some of them, unfortunately, maybe not even be Christians anymore because they never learned, in a sense, that art of sonship, learning how to be a son and getting everything that God wanted to birth through their spiritual father through and to them, if that makes sense.
Absolutely makes perfect sense. But yet, sadly, I agree with you. I think you could have called it the lost art of sonship, because I truly believe in our society that actually lives with a very fractured family unit in many ways. It is truly becoming a lost art. And along those lines, I think I'd want to ask you this question, because every great book and every great teaching, every great thought comes out of a problem that it's trying to solve. You know, and I guess what problem were you trying to address or solve? What need did you see that led you to write this? I mean, what would you want someone to get out of this book?
Yeah, well, I think it first starts with the personal revelation for yourself. I think the need was me looking at some of the things that were rising up in my heart and the things that I had to process and the things that, you know, sometimes in church life that didn't seem right or didn't seem fair. I was either, in a sense, just in my mind, I had to make a choice. Which son would I be? Would I be the son that self-sabotaged? Would I be the son that became rebellious? Or would I be the son that actually reigned? And in Solomon's case, you know, Solomon was actually able to do things that were more than what David could. In fact, God said, hey, David, you can't build the temple. David, you can't do this. But your son Solomon would. And so I want to be that kind of son that does things that, you know, maybe the other generations weren't able to, but I passed the test. And so to answer your question, that's what I want for this next generation of church leaders, is to be able to pass some of those tests and to actually break through some of the barriers that maybe the previous generations weren't able to break through because maybe they didn't pass those tests. So that's kind of what I think I'm passionate about and wanting to see people do, is pass those tests and not just abort their destiny or their purpose and in a sense just try to do it on their own. But God has a avenue and a method that can actually get you to go further than where you currently are.
Absolutely. And would you agree with this, Israel, that sonship and knowing whose son and whose daughter you are addresses identity issues. It secures us even in our past or our failures or our brokenness, to know whose house we belong to. Ultimately, you know, our leaders, but ultimately Christ, you know, that we're sons and daughters of God. I mean, sonship, just it addresses identity, and it should give all of us great security. And bring healing to a lot of brokenness that, quite frankly, is present. I just think because people and believers forget whose they are,
yeah,
and where they belong.
Yeah, so true. I mean, it all is. I think what you're saying is that identity thing, and we're having that in this postmodern world that we live in. You know, so many times you could hear daddy issues, or just issues with identity. And when you really understand the first part of being the son of son and daughter of God, it will help you in every other relationship. And so yes. I've had some pretty messed up in the natural relationship issues. And so when I start developing and getting a hold of this spiritual sonship concept, it actually, like you said, not only does it heal me, but it actually then catapults into how better a father I can be to my kids, yep. How much better of a husband I can be to my wife, what a better pastor I can be to my congregation when I can, really grab a hold of some of those sonship concepts that really do start and finish with identity.
I feel like I had a revelation the other day on something having to do with the church. And this is so simple, but to me, it just hit me in a really profound way. So we've all met these people that say something like, I love Jesus, but not the church. You know, the church is an institution, an organization, too political, corrupt, I mean, you know, whatever people say. I love Jesus, but I don't love the church. And so I thought about this. People's relationship with God is determined by how he treats them, which of course is perfect love and always kind and present. But people's relationship with the church is often determined not by how God treats them, but by how people treat them. And so a lot of the reasons I see people disconnect from the church or uproot their lives in church have to do with having bumped their heads along the way with God's people. And so we end up with this, I love God, but there is something about the church and the people in the church that I don't want anything to do with that anymore. I don't want to be a part of that. But when I think about what's held me in the same church my whole life, it's actually because, it's not that I never bumped my head, but it's that I became a son of the house. And I became secure in that identity. And that identity actually carried me through all of the bumps in the road. And it's the reason I love God's house. I don't love God's house because it's flawless. I love God's house because my life was changed there. And because I recognize that that's actually the place that God has me planted. And so I just love to hear your thoughts for a second on being a son of the house. I mean, what does it look like to be a son or be a daughter of the house? And why is that important for a believer, but specifically a leader, you know, those that are leading in ministry? In other words, not just a job, but to truly be a son of the thing that you're a part of.
Well, yeah, and I think that thought that you were thinking is brilliant. And of course, just the whole leading second ministry that you're birthing is just so important, because in at least in my mind, is I agree with you, being a son of the house. You know, Jesus is actually, the Bible says, is coming back for his church. Yep. And so he's not coming back for a podcast. Nothing yep. wrong with a podcast, because we're recording one right now.
Right.
He's not coming back for a live stream. He's coming back for his church.
Yes.
And part of that is us making choices to build God's house, what is eternal. And, you know, I wonder sometimes, maybe this isn't answering your question, but I wonder sometimes if we're not seeing the full end of times, because the Bible says he's waiting for his church without spot or wrinkle. And I've got some laundry that have some spots, and I've got some laundry that needs some wrinkles and or has some wrinkles. And those spots and wrinkles just don't come out. It's going to take some work. And being a son or daughter is actually seeing the church and realizing, yeah, there are some spots and there are some wrinkles, but we have been gifted and given talents to actually take out some of those spots, take out some of those wrinkles, and actually make the church a place that can be life-changing for so many people. And I think it bugs me when somebody, you know, gives up on the church because of a certain issue. And it's like giving up on the church doesn't fix the church, but actually staying there and yes. Being part of the solution, and especially if you observe it, that means there's some people that may not see it that angle, or maybe they're not gifted in that to fix it. Most of the times, the things in church that bug us are the same things that we're gifted to fix.
Totally.
And so if
true.
We just all, if we bail on it, then the church never gets better, and the church getting better is what Jesus is coming back for. And so I understand your tension on that. And, you know, we have these great opportunities. The Bible says, you know, the Old Testament's always the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And every generation, it grew. So Abraham only has Isaac. Isaac has Jacob and Esau. And then Jacob has 12 sons. And so there's this multiplication when it comes to sonship that can happen. And so I think about you and I making decisions to be sons of, you know, in a sense, sons of the house. But what about your daughter? What is she going to do? Mm. What are my three kids going to do? If we can train them to be sons and daughters of the house, they're going to be that multiplied generation that are going to do so much more than we can do if we can keep our hearts right and understand that sonship is not always everything is in agreement with what we want to do, but sonship is part of the process of allowing God to purify our heart and become part of the house and help the house be everything God's called it to be.
Absolutely. And I hope that people that are listening to this, I hope that people are realizing that the art of sonship we're talking about is genderless, that this is a son and a daughter. Like we're everyone can be a son and a daughter of the house. And,
totally.
And, you know, like the other day it was fun, Israel, we were driving into, like a daddy daughter breakfast at, my daughter's school. And, we were driving, and from the back seat, she pipes up and she said, "Dad, are you the pastor of Leading Second?" And she knows she was at our launch. She knows that we're up to something. I don't think she quite knows what it is. And I said, "Well, I guess you could say it like that. You know, I guess that's probably accurate." So she paused for a second, and then she goes, "So does that mean that I could be the vice pastor of Leading Second?"
Awesome.
And I thought, vice pastor, I'm imagining it's kind of a vice president sort of a feel. I imagine that's what a vice pastor is. And it just really hit me. It was such a funny, in a ways, conversation. But I just remember thinking, thank God she feels secure in this. Like we're giving her something to belong to, you know. We're giving her something to that, you know, anchors her in. And
yeah.
I don't know, that little small conversation ended up just meaning the world to me, because Lord knows I don't get it right as a parent. But man, if she is finding her place as a daughter of the house, a son of the house, you know, just maybe we're onto something that can sustain her through the bumps in the road along the way.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that purpose, so good.
So I have this question for you, maybe as we wrap up today. What would you want every son to understand about being a son, or every daughter to understand about being a daughter? I mean, what should we work at getting right if we want to be a son of the house? What would you want them to understand?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the experiences that I've had is I've been a, you know, I've been a youth pastor. I've been on team where I wasn't the lead pastor. I've been a senior pastor. And I think that one of the things that we can so often do is, and we can see it in David's sons too, but what they'll do or what we can do is we can sometimes see our fathers and we can see their flaws. And we can see their mistakes. And instead of learning to, I like the Old Testament story of Noah covering their flaws, we just, in a sense, stare and we become asphyxiated on what they're not doing right instead of actually getting a hold of, but what can I get from this great man and woman of God? What price have they paid? What different things, you know, can I get? And I just think the biggest thing for me when I think of sons and I think of daughters that don't quite make it is that they're thinking and their processes of keeping their heart pure and keeping their heart from being upset and whatever it has to do with many times not being able to handle the process of maybe their spiritual dad and why did they make that decision. And I think oftentimes we just don't know all the information, if that makes sense. And as we get older and we get wiser, then we go, oh, that's why they didn't do that.
Totally.
And then we miss it. And so I maybe that's too long of an answer. But I think that that's the biggest part is just, you know, really, I trusting God that they hear from God. And if I don't fully understand, I don't fully get it, or I don't even fully agree, it's okay because I know that they're listening to God. Mm-hmm. And God will, at the end, turn it right, but I'm not going to self-sabotage myself in the meantime and miss out on what God has for me.
Okay, so let me ask you the same question now, but in reverse about fathers, you know, fathers wanting to raise up sons and daughters. What would you say to every father? What should they understand about being a father?
Yeah. And you know, it's funny that you say that because I just this recently was watching a sports game and I saw this and was like, wow, they were doing commercials. I saw a Facebook commercial, I saw an Uber commercial, and I saw a Wells Fargo commercial. And all of them, in an essence, were saying, we were wrong, we're sorry, and we're going to work on it.
Wow.
And I think the world's kind of getting a hold of that. I think spiritual fathers sometimes, and you can bring this all the way back to, you know, maybe Catholicism and maybe just really religious people, that it was always this sense of the spiritual fathers are always right no matter what because God's ordained us, we're anointed, we're the man of God, and we're the spiritual leader. Maybe that was for a time period of they needed that. But I think really good sons and really good daughters need dads, spiritual leaders that are okay with saying, I made a mistake, we missed it on this
so
one.
So good.
I thought I was on the right page, but obviously it's not. Things didn't turn out as well as I intended, but we're going to make it through. And I think that that would be something that I'm trying to emulate more and more. But I'm seeing the world do it. I think a spiritual fathers being able to say we're wrong is a really good start of being a good spiritual dad.
Man, so, so good. Well, my friend, we love you. So thankful for what you're building in California, but thank you for you know, getting in line and working hard to help people that are far from Southern California through your book. I'm so thankful for what you're doing and what you're birthing through that. I believe it's going to help a lot of people.
Well, same thing with you. I'm so appreciative of our relationship, but I am more than appreciative. I really feel like what you're doing with Leading Second is not only going to impact this nation and churches, but it's going to impact the world. And I love your heart. I love your heart for God's house. I love your heart for your church and your pastor, and it's contagious. Anytime I'm around you, I want to love on my pastor more and love on my church more because of this heart that you have. So keep it up, keep crushing it, and let's have a board meeting in Hermosa Beach soon.
Deal. Done. I love it. Thanks, my friend.
If this podcast has resonated with you, we would love to hear from you. I want to encourage you to subscribe to the podcast so we can join you every single week, wherever you listen to this from. I'd encourage you also to jump over and leave a rating, a comment, even share it with someone who doesn't know about the podcast yet, or share it with your team, go through it with your team. We would just count it an honor to be a part of your world in any way. And let me just say, if you are leading on a church team, you're a young leader, we love you, we believe in you. We started Leading Second for you. We got in line for you. And my prayer is that this weekly installment of leadership just adds a layer, a perspective to your life, because I believe we're better together. So let's run strong for the kingdom, Leading Second, and let's lead in an uncommon way together.